For the first time since 2015, LSU opens at home. Let's hope that this game wasn't like that game, one that was canceled in their first quarter due to weather that never moved out of the area against McNeese State. We'll hear from the coach of the Georgia Southern Eagles. Mississippi State coming to the Superdome. We'll hear from their head coach, Joe Moorhead. Some troubling times in Mississippi State. Great news for the New Orleans Saints. We'll tell you about that. And Mr. College Football, as we gear up for the 150th season of the game we love, today, Wednesday, August 27th, 2019.
Well, we're excited about opening the season with a formidable opponent, the SEC West, Mississippi State Bulldogs. Man, very talented team, big, fast, athletic team. We certainly had a chance to compete against these guys last year.
I would say we started breaking them down last February. Started looking at them in the spring. Analysts did a great job in the recruiting period, we had extensive meetings on them. We had walkthroughs on them, so we've been preparing for them since the spring.
I'm not even gonna lie, it's very surreal putting on cleats again to come out here and go through warm-up lines, walkthroughs, everything like that. You know, seeing your teammates embrace you, they haven't been out here in a while, so it's kind of surreal. But you know, once the ball is put down, it's football, and you know, there's a task to be accomplished. I'll go out there and do that the best of my ability.
Fun time of year. We're certainly ready to kick it off and get back out on the field. We actually went out under the lights last night, which was pretty cool, preparing for an 8 o'clock kick. But we've had really good camp, good game prep. It's just kind of there's only so far you can get without going and playing a game. And that's the next step for us is playing an opponent.
Playing an opponent. Yes, indeed. Everybody on pins and needles waiting to see how their favorite team responds in their opening game. Hopefully, it'll be better than what we saw in the marquee matchup of week zero with Florida and Miami. That was a debacle. Florida fans, be happy you won. Miami fans, you lost, but you represented well. But, yeah, that's not going to the College Football Hall of Fame. I can promise you. They're not going to send the tape of that one. Good afternoon and welcome. How are you? Wednesday, middle of the week, as we get ready for where many of you will be a long weekend with the Labor Day holiday coming up on Monday. We'll be here bringing it to you and recapping the weekend. CD back in the master control suite in the 237 Roost Studios, the campus of Delta Media, KLWB 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. You heard Billy Napier talking about it, how excited they are to get ready to take on a Power 5 school like Mississippi State. If you're at Orgeron and you're going to play a team like Georgia Southern, or triple option team, the best news you got is you play them week one. You got time to prepare. You don't want to play them in the middle of the season between SEC opponents. No. That's when it gets tricky. Now you've had plenty of time to prepare for this ball club, to know who's got the quarterback, who's got the pitch man, who's got the dive man, all that stuff in football jargon. So that's a good thing. And you heard from Sheldon Rankins. And that's where we begin today, because the Saints got some really, really good news yesterday. Sheldon Rankins was expected to start the season on injured reserve. Well, he seems to be ahead of schedule, recovering from his Achilles injury suffered last season in the divisional round against the Eagles. NFL reporter Ian Rappaport broke the news Monday night that Rankins would be activated from the PUP list. Now, I honestly thought he was going to spend the first half of the year on that PUP list and then hopefully get back and be ready to go for the stretch run. Now, this doesn't mean he's going to play in week one against the Texans, but it's a sign he'll be ready to go before week 8, as previously thought. So that's the very, very good news. And head coach Sean Payton marveled over the recovery rate of Rankins.
No, and it was a little bit more in-depth than just that. But again, I don't have the date offhand. You know, it was in the playoffs, right? So, he's obviously the surgery went well, and his rehab's gone well. So we'll be smart.
He says he's never seen someone recover from an Achilles injury so fast. Not going to put a timetable, but he's back. He's able to practice. He's able to do some individual work. He's able to get in that training room. He's a part of the team. And he's a guy that, okay, if you get a little nicked up and hurt a little bit, you can look at Sheldon Rankins and say, look at the injury he had and look at the work he put in to get himself back and ready to go. But Sean Payton says no timetable on his return.
I'm not going to put a time clock on, you know, when we think he'll be able to play, because obviously the injury he had was significant. But he's worked real hard to put himself in that position.
It's great news. Sheldon Rankins obviously happy, and he talked about getting back and returning to the field of play.
It's by the grace of God, man. I put it all in his hands, and I've had a great support system throughout this entire thing, you know, family, loved ones, this training staff. Put me in the right position to be able to progress daily and be able to get back out here and give myself a shot to be able to help this team.
He is such a key factor depth-wise along that defensive line. He has become a heck of a player, a high draft pick coming out of college, devastating injury, but great to see him back. And he, too, says, hey, no timetable, not going to promise you anything about when I'm going to be able to play.
No, you know, so right now, just taking a day at a time, like, you know, and when I'm ready, I'll be ready. And when that time comes, I'll be out there helping this team the best I can.
There you go. He's ready. That's Super Bowl or bust for the New Orleans Saints. Teddy Bridgewater will play an awful lot against Miami. He's looking forward to that. But the reporters asked him, it was very poignant, I thought, about the Andrew Luck situation and Andrew Luck's announced retirement. Teddy Bridgewater had these comments upon hearing about Andrew Luck.
It's tough to see, but I'm happy for him that he's able to, you know, walk away at peace. You know, we know that he's a great football player. He's a great human being, and whatever reasons that he had for, you know, hanging it up, you know, you can't do anything but respect a guy like that. He's a guy who's carried himself, you know, at the top-notch level ever since high school. And I've been following him since he was in high school at Stanford and in Indy. So, you know, it's tough to see a great competitor like that, you know, hang it up. But, you know, I respect the decision that he made, and I wish him the best moving forward.
Of course, injuries were the key factor with Andrew Luck. It took the joy away from the game. You remember the devastating injury from Teddy Bridgewater. He was asked if he ever thought about hanging it up.
Yeah, you have those dark days, and, you know, sometimes you're in that dark place where you don't think you can get out of. And, you know, everyone's situation is different. Everyone's story is different. But, like I said, I respect Andrew, not only as a football player, but as a man. And, now I'll continue to respect him moving forward.
Thursday night, final preseason game, Saturday by 3 p.m. at the latest. Got to get down to your 53-man roster to get ready for the season opener, which kicks off on a Monday night as the Houston Texans come to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. There's the latest on the Saints. Some good news with Sheldon Rankins. All right, we'll take our first time out of the day. Time to talk Tigers and Raging Cajuns. We'll hear from both head coaches for the Eagles and the Bulldogs when we return here, the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We are Acadiana's number one sports station, baby. I'm proud of it.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, LSU opens its third full season under head coach Ed Orgeron, and when the sixth-ranked Tigers host Georgia Southern 6:30 p.m. this Saturday in Tiger Stadium. The game will be televised on ESPNU and heard over the airwaves on 103.7 The Game. It's the first time LSU opens a season at home since the Tigers faced McNeese State in 2015. That game was canceled early in the first quarter due to weather that never moved out of the area. Yep, Ed Orgeron pretty darn good in season openers. In fact, he's 5-0 all time. 2-0 at LSU, 3-0 at Ole Miss. He's 25-9 in 34 games as LSU's head coach heading into this season opener. Of the 25 wins with the Tigers, 19 have come by double figures. Woo! LSU's won two straight. 15 of its last 16 season opening contests dating back to 2003. The only loss, Wisconsin, Lambeau Field, to open the 2016 season. And that was the end of the end of one less Miles. Georgia Southern game, just the sixth time LSU will play a game during the month of August in school history. LSU is 5-0 in games played in August. The last one, August 30th, 2014. They beat Wisconsin 28-24 in Arlington. Despite all those figures and all those numbers, head coach Chad Lunsford of the Georgia Southern Eagles pretty fired up about the season opener.
Excited to get the football season started. Our guys have been working pretty hard throughout this offseason and really have shown to have a chip on their shoulder and not get complacent with our season last year. And so really looking forward to seeing what our team looks like and excited about having some guys back and being the second year in our offensive scheme and our defensive scheme. So a lot of guys that are more comfortable but not complacent. So very excited about what's coming up.
They're coming off their last performance was a win December 15th versus Eastern Michigan. They won that game 23-21. He turned that team around. They got 10 wins, and mainly because they run an offense that not very many people get to plan for. Good thing for LSU. Good thing for Dave Aranda and Bill Bush and Bill Johnson, Corey Raymond, and the like to have had the entire summer, spring, summer, fall camp to get ready as Coach Lunsford talks about the triple option.
I think with the gun option that allows you, maybe to get into more multiple formations, more set, being able to disguise different things, but still run your same offense. But both of them still have the same principles of, trying to play 9-on-11 football where you take one guy out because you're reading him and you take one guy out because you're trying to pitch off of him. So, very similar, but also different ways to disguise things.
Who's got the quarterback? Who's got the dive guy? Who's got the pitch guy? And that's what Ed Orgeron has been preaching. All of the LSU defensive coaches will be on the field. Steve Ensminger, the offensive coordinator, and Joe Brady, the passing game coordinator, will be up in the press box for this. To make the triple option work, you got to have a veteran. You got to have a quarterback that knows what the heck they're doing. Shy Wirtz cleared of some off-the-field antics. Everything is cleared. He's good to go. And now in his third season as a quarterback running this type of an offense, and Chad Lunsford talked about his quarterback?
You know, that first year for Shy Wirtz, he was when he redshirted, and then the next year when he started as a redshirt freshman, you know, he relied off athleticism because offenses had changed. And then last year we worked on his fundamentals a good bit, and, you know, when he became a better quarterback. This year, going into it, you know, you see growth in him as knowing the offense, the whole offense, and more being like a coach on the field. So his ability to run and throw and his ability to run the offense, you know, we're expecting a great year from him.
It'll be the first matchup ever between LSU and Georgia Southern. 6:30 kickoff Saturday night, Tiger Stadium. By that time, we'll know who won the game down in New Orleans in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome between Mississippi State and the Raging Cajuns. On Friday, the NCAA announced that a part-time Mississippi State athletics tutor took exams and did assignments for an online chemistry course for 10 Mississippi State football players and a basketball player during the fall 2018 semester. Mississippi State self-reported the violations, and the two organizations agreed. The now former tutor nearly completed the course for some athletes. So some of these suspended Mississippi State football players who violated academic policies will be identified before this weekend's game. Head coach Joe Moorhead, that's the last thing he wanted, but he talked about Tutorgate.
Like anything, whether it's a suspension or an injury or, you know, guys not being able to play, you kind of sit in on a Sunday and look at the people who are available and make the necessary adjustments to the depth chart and the schemes and try to do your best to put your kids in position to be successful. So that's just something where you got to do it on the front end and making sure you're making all the necessary adjustments based on who's available.
They'll make that announcement prior to the game on Saturday. I don't think it's going to be any of their key players. I think it's a whole bunch of freshmen or redshirt freshmen for a year ago, but time will tell. Here's Joe Moorhead talking about the Raging Cajuns.
So Southern Louisiana, a very talented team. And as you see in openers, you know, a lot of it goes into turnover margin. A lot of it goes into special teams play. A lot of it goes into execution. You certainly entered a game with an element of the unknown, where just like us, they've had an entire season to kind of study what they do, find out what they do well, fix what they don't do well, and then, you know, look into other people. And, you know, that's something in the first game where you don't necessarily have a lot of game. You don't have any game film from this year where that element of the unknown is something you need to be prepared for.
It was ugly a year ago in Starkville. Mississippi State won it 56-10. Nick Fitzgerald is gone. The quarterback derby has been settled. It was not Keaton Thompson. It was Tommy Stevens, the transfer from Penn State, where Joe Moorhead used to coach as an offensive coordinator. He talks about what he has seen from his quarterback, Tommy Stevens.
I've seen a lot more maturity and a lot more understanding. And, you know, early on in Tommy's career in kind of 16 and maybe not so much in 17, that he's so incredibly athletic and gifted physically as a runner, as a thrower, he would kind of fall back on those things and maybe not be as precise in the details of it. And what I've seen throughout camp and, you know, heading into practice week is a maturation and an understanding of the details, you know, where maybe in the past he would not, you know, change a protection, thinking he could get the ball out if it wasn't picked up, or maybe not go through his reads and kind of improvise.
He likes him. So immediately upon losing the gig, Keaton Thompson enters the transfer portal. Joe Moorhead talked about the Louisiana native and his transferring thoughts.
Yeah, I love KT. He's a great kid and, you know, certainly was involved in a very healthy and spirited competition, which, you know, unfortunately for him, he came out on the short end. And, you know, we met the day that we announced it with him, with he and Tommy. Then came back the next day and discussed his desire to put his name in the portal and explore his options. Myself, KT, and Coach Briner met yesterday. We're scheduled to meet again either today or tomorrow and kind of see where he's at with that. You know, I understand that's part of it, and student-athletes are exploring, you know, the different possibilities, and I think it's probably most common at that position.
particularly the quarterback position. We've seen it throughout the course of this season. How many transfers are now starting, including the starting quarterback at Mississippi State? And he was penciled in to be the starter at Penn State, but he left because he really liked Joe Moorhead. The handwriting was on the wall for Ketan Thompson. Last year, Mississippi State, maybe the best defense in the country. They led in just about every statistical category that you can keep. And they were led because of a great safety who's now in the NFL and two terrific defensive linemen who were first-round picks in the NFL, this recent NFL draft. They're still going to be stout, but can they be as good? I doubt it. But here is the head coach, Joe Moorhead, talking about his defensive line this year.
Yeah, I think that's the one spot on the defensive line where we may not have a Jeffrey or a Braxton right now. We certainly have talented players, but we're gonna have to win and perform with numbers in there. And certainly, once you've during camp, it was a little bit different where you can rotate guys through there. But now, when you're limited in the number of guys who are taking reps with the ones and twos, really to four or five guys on the inside, I don't think you can utilize those reps on someone you're not sure they're gonna play. So he's down working with the scout team until we get another word. And, if and when he's cleared, knock on wood, hopefully when, then we can talk about getting him into the rotation.
All right, one final clip from Joe Moorhead. And, Clint, great job getting all this for us. He's heading into his second year as the head coach at Mississippi State, and he commented on the Raging Cajuns heading into year two under Billy Napier.
Anytime you win your side of the division and get to go to a bowl game, things are going well. Won seven games. But I think, having been at a, quote, group of five place or an FCS school that had the ability to jump up and play some, 1A schools at Fordham, we were fortunate enough to win two of our four, that this is a game where the kids get fired up, they get excited about playing an SEC West team. So, we're expecting to see their best. And, like anything, year one to year two is when you're going to see whether it's a freshman becoming a sophomore or an entire program. You see, the most improvement in that year one to year two jump. So I'm expecting to see the same from them.
Certainly hope it is a big jump for the Raging Cajuns. Again, they got beat 56-10. Look, it's the only game of this sort on the schedule this year. Boy, it could set the stage for a remarkable season for the Raging Cajuns if they were to upset Mississippi State. But it's not the end of the world if they don't. They just don't want to get blown out and get demoralized like they were a year ago. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Billy Napier will have his club ready. And I think Levi Lewis will have to step up and play a very good game. And as you heard earlier, he's going back to the scene of a heartbreaking moment in the state championship game in the Superdome, has a chance to exorcise those demons. It's the 150th year of college football. Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, joins us next.
Who's got game and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, week zero behind us, week one of the 150th college football season about to get underway. No one knows more about the history of the game than Mr. College Football himself. He works with the SEC Network. He writes for TMGCollegeSports.com, does radio 680 The Fan in Atlanta. He's here, he's there, he's everywhere. Mr. Tony Barnhart, kind enough to join us. Tony, I sure hope week one's better than what we saw in week zero, or else this 150th season is going to be awful.
I told somebody, Jordy, I said, I'm not saying that's the ugliest football game I've ever seen, but it's probably in the top two. It was just brutal to watch. But you know what? I try to tell all my Florida fans, don't get panic. You're 1-0, right, which is what you wanted to be. But yeah, the Gators have some work to do.
They had mental mistakes. They had penalties. They had atrocious tackling. and some, I guess the mental mistake is the pass that Felipe Franks threw late in the game that was captured on the expression of one Steve Spurrier. I thought that was priceless.
Well, that situation, I can understand throwing the ball, but what you have to tell the quarterback, and I'll bet you Dan Mullen told this to Felipe Franks. He said, look, we got 4.5 minutes to run off the clock. We're not running the ball a lick against these guys. So we got to get 2 first downs if we're going to win, run off the clock and win the game. So we're going to call a safe pass play. It's going to be one route. You look over there, if he's covered, throw it away. Well, guess what? He looked over there. There was not one, not two, but 3 guys from Miami over there, and he threw it anyway. So I'm guessing that Dan Mullen told his quarterback to throw it away, and the quarterback did not heed his advice.
I thought Miami was a little bit better. I don't think they have anything to hang their heads on. I mean, their defense is really good, and I think that offense with that rookie quarterback is going to get better.
I tried to calm my Miami friends down. They were so upset. Yeah, listen, they had chances to win the game. I understand that. But I'm sitting here looking at Florida's schedule, and I'm sitting here looking at Miami's schedule. And if I'm a Miami fan, I feel a lot better about things because there's not a team on that schedule. They don't play Florida State. I mean, they don't play Clemson. They do play Florida State, but they should have a chance to win the rest of the games they play.
Did we see the emergence of a new star? I mean, this Kadarius Toney for Florida. He's pretty good.
This is a guy I've been saying for over a year. The guy averaged 10.9 yards every time he touched the ball last year. Well, in this game, he touched it 4 times. One of those times went for 66 yards.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's a former high school quarterback. Great athlete, and they got to find ways to get him more touches in games. I'm sure Miami was well aware of him, which is why he didn't get as many touches.
Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football, kind enough to join us. It is the 150th season. It is a big season expected, as always, in the SEC. Let's just play a little game. Give me Tony Barnhart's Mount Rushmore of the 4 most influential coaches in SEC football history.
Oh, wow. Well, you start with Bryant, then you go with Spurrier, then you probably go with Nealon. Then after that, it's not, to me, it's not so clear. I mean, but I would say those three for sure. Spurrier changed the game, the way the game was played in the SEC. When he got to Florida in 1990, if you average 24, 25 points a game, that was good enough. Well, he jacked that up number to around 31 to 35. The leading winner at both Florida and South Carolina, which is – and everybody knows – and obviously Nick Saban has got to be on that list. And that's just – but those would be the – I'm sure I'm leaving out somebody really important, but I think those four –
Vince Dooley's never going to answer your phone call again.
Well, Vince Dooley, 25 years, 201 wins, 6 SEC championships.
But Saban has the national championship, so I'm with you. I'm with you on those four. How about the 4 most influential players in SEC football history?
Well, I would certainly think Herschel Walker would be one of them. Bo Jackson would be one of them. Peyton Manning would be one of them. Okay. And after that, guys like Danny Werfel. I mean, he wasn't a pro player, but he influenced the way the game was played. Derek Thomas, one of the great outside rushers that I've ever seen. After the obvious choice, there are about 100 guys who deserve to be number 4. So
maybe even a Billy Cannon, a Heisman Trophy winner.
Absolutely.
You never know. Okay, Tony Barnhart, let's get back to this now. Week 1 has always got a couple of snoozers in it, like Texas State taking on Texas A&M, Toledo and Kentucky. Ole Miss Memphis, that's kind of a scary, sneaky game, isn't it?
It is if you're Ole Miss.
Yes.
Memphis is a 6-point favorite. They're picked to win their side of the American Athletic Conference. Mike Norvell's done an incredible job there. And this is a game that Ole Miss has got to win because they're trying to get to 6 wins because they're eligible for a bowl. And I don't see six wins for Ole Miss unless they beat Memphis. It's a big, big game for Ole Miss.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mississippi State traveling down to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome to take on former Alabama assistant, now head coach for the Raging Cajuns, Billy Napier. Be a lot of Cajuns coming down the interstate to fill up that that Superdome. Some off-the-field issues with Mississippi State, the NCAA, some academic improprieties. Coach Moorhead said he's not going to announce who the suspended players are until just before the game, but those players know who they are. Is this turmoil going to affect Mississippi State in some way, shape, or form?
Not in terms of who wins the football game. It's not, for the guys that don't get to play, it's not going to be a lot of fun. But, no, I think that the storyline on this game is the quarterback, Tommy Stevens, the transfer from Penn State, who played for Joe Moorhead. What does the offense look like? He beat out Keaton Thompson, the guy who was the backup last year.
That's
what I'm going to be looking for when I see parts of this game, is how do they improve the passing game, or do they improve the passing game from what they had a year ago?
A great game between the Carolinas, South Carolina, and Will Muschamp, and the re-debut of Mack Brown at North Carolina. That's always fun.
Well, Mack decided to get back into coaching, and he's going to start a true freshman as well. This is a big game for South Carolina and Will Muschamp, because this is going to be his best team that he's had at South Carolina. But you look at that schedule, and it's just absolutely ridiculous who all they're playing. And so, you know, if they're going to get to a respectable year like a 7-5, and North Carolina's a game that they've got to win. And, you know, Mac starting over, the personnel is down at North Carolina. That's why he's there. And so I think South Carolina's got an edge there, but the game's in Charlotte. That's a big University of North Carolina town. It will be that will be kind of fun to watch.
I just wish they could have adjusted schedules and had Kansas and North Carolina play at some point in time this year with Les and Mac. That would have been interesting. All right? What's the over-under on that one?
That would have been entertaining.
That might have made your top three worst games ever.
Well, all I know is that all of us who are in this business, we miss Les Miles. We miss him bad. We need his sense of humor.
Yeah. Georgia State taking on Tennessee. Every game's a big game for Tennessee in this rebuild as they try to get their fan support back and the belief, right? So this is a big game for the Volunteers.
Looking at quarterback Jarrett Garantano, of course, Tennessee brought in Jim Chaney, the offensive coordinator at Georgia. This is actually Jim Chaney's second tour of duty at Tennessee. So I think everybody's going to be looking to see how that impacts Jarrett Garantano, how they're going to be in the running game. They still have big issues on the offensive and defensive line. So they need to take care of business. They got BYU next week in Knoxville, which is going to be kind of interesting. Then 2 weeks later, they go to Florida.
Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, kind enough to join us. I think when they scheduled this game, they thought maybe Duke might have a pretty good quarterback in their stable, but he's now playing for the Giants. But are you of the belief that that Nick Saban takes no prisoners this year?
Well, I think he's going to win convincingly when he gets a chance. You know, everybody thinks fondly of David Cutcliffe, the Duke coach, who's a Alabama grad, and I know he's looking forward to this game. But no, it's I don't think the Dukies are going to be able to hang in there with them for more than maybe a half. But This is all about Alabama playing up to the standard that they believe in. After getting their doors blown off by Clemson. So, yeah, it's and what's going to be interesting about this is with Steve Sarkisian back as offensive coordinator, what does the offense look like? We know what it looked like last year when Tua threw for 8 million yards, but he also got beat on a lot last year and was worn down by the end of the year. He's been told, don't do that. And so it's going to be interesting to see if this is how much they run the ball in this game, even with Tua and all those great wide receivers.
Is there a better set of skilled position people, quarterback, wide receivers, running back in the country than what Alabama has? I say no.
No, this is as deep a set of wide receivers as you're ever going to see. The whole world wanted Najee Harris, the running back, when he came out of high school, and everybody knows about Tua. So now the skill is incredible. They're going to rebuild the offensive line. They'll be very good. I mean, look, Alabama's going to go 12-0. Nobody's going to beat them in the regular season. If the LSU game was in Baton Rouge, I would pause and think about that for a minute. But they're not going to beat them in Tuscaloosa. So they're going to go 12-0. Georgia's going to go 12-0, and we're going to have another battle royal in Atlanta on December 7th.
Yeah, two versus three, because nobody's going to beat Clemson either. So that's going to be interesting. Please tell me Arkansas beats Portland State, please, for Chad Morris's sake.
They will, because now they don't have a left tackle playing quarterback anymore like they did last year. No, they did. They had a left tackle playing quarterback. And Chad Morris knew there was a lot of steps to fixing this thing. And the first thing he had to do was fix the quarterback room. Well, he did that. He did that with Ben Hicks, the transfer, who was named the starter. He played for Morris at SMU, so he knows the system. Nick Starkel, who was a guy at Texas A&M last year, who I thought was good enough to beat out Kellen Mond for the job. He didn't, and Mond played really well. But Nick Starkel is a very talented. So they fixed the quarterback room. Now they got to fix the offensive line room. Now they got to fix the defensive line room. They got a long way to go. I picked them to go 0-8 in the league last year. They went 0-8. And right now, with them playing at Ole Miss, I'm not sure. I am not sure where the conference wins are going to come from.
Is Chad Morris going to be around to see this rebuild completed? That the time will tell. Are you in the Missouri camp? A lot of people saying those Tigers could be 8-0 at one point in time during the season.
Absolutely. I am big on Missouri because of the quarterback, Kelly Bryant, with his skill set and what Derek Dooley was able to do last year with Drew Locke. So they got the quarterback situation figured out and the schedule. I mean, just look at the schedule. If they could beat Kentucky and Lexington, and that's not easy, but that's their eighth game. If they could win that game, they could be 8-0 going to Georgia on November 16th. So I think they turned a big corner at Missouri last year, and so we'll see. But I don't, in the first eight games, other than Kentucky, I don't see a team that is going to beat them.
All right, Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, going over week one games in the SEC. We've got one SEC on SEC, well, I guess you could call it that, Georgia at Vanderbilt. Poor Vandy. George, Jake Fromm and company, DeAndre Swift, they're too good.
I like Georgia a lot. I think there's the first tier of teams in college football are Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. I think Georgia is on the same level with Alabama and Clemson, and they're good in all the places you got to be good. They're good at quarterback. They're good at running back. They've got the best offensive line in the country. Their receivers are young, but they're receivers that everybody in the world wanted, and they're talented. And the defense, the number two defense in the conference, returned 7 starters. So it's all laid out there for Georgia. They should take care of business against Vanderbilt, even though Vanderbilt has some good, very good skill people. And then the big game comes up on the 21st when Notre Dame comes to Sanford Stadium, which will now be Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium.
Oh, nice. And as old Charlie Mack used to say, yeah, we're going to go take on the Bulldogs behind the bushes.
Behind the bushes, that's right.
Behind the bushes. I guess for LSU, if you're going to play a triple option team like Georgia Southern, it's really good to play them the first game of the year. You got all summer to prepare for something that you don't ever see anymore. But Georgia Southern's not that bad.
No, Georgia Southern has been a force in the Sun since they joined the Sun Belt Conference several years ago. And Georgia Southern has a great tradition. 5 1AA national championships before they moved up into the big boy leagues. And, yeah, if you're going to play the option attack, you want to play it first game and be able to work on it every day. I really like this LSU team. Right now I've got them winning every game but one.
Okay.
And that's how much I think of them.
Awesome. Tony Barnhart, his stature in Baton Rouge and the state of Louisiana has just gone up tenfold on that comment. Very wise sage. That's why he's lasted as long as he has. I'm just kidding. But the big game in the SEC, involving the SEC, is number 11 Oregon, number 16 Auburn. Gus Malzahn, in a very pivotal year, going with a freshman quarterback against one of the best quarterbacks in the country, according to NFL scouts, in Herbert. We call him A-Bear here, but Herbert across the country. So your thoughts on the big game in the league this week?
It is a huge, huge, huge quality of life game for Gus Malzahn and the Auburn Tigers. If they can win it, then they buy themselves a little time because they play Tulane and Kent State before they go to Texas A&M. If they lose it, then Paul Feinbaum's switchboard is going to light up on Monday, and Gus Malzahn is in a hole and is going to have to keep – he's going to be digging out of a hole all season. Oregon is a really good football team. They're picked by a lot of people to win the Pac-12. You mentioned Herbert. They have an offensive line. They've probably got the best offensive line in the Pac-12. They're coached by Mario Cristobal, who used to be the offensive line coach at Alabama, who has, I'm told, brought an SEC mentality to that entire program, and that means they will be a very, very tough out. I like Auburn, but ever so close.
Ever so close. Well, we love getting you on here. I know you're a busy man. Whenever we get the opportunity, we'll call you. We're not going to bug you to death, but 150 years, big guy. Let's have a good one. Enjoy it, and thank you.
All right, Jordy, always good to be with you.
Oh, man, you're the best. Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, back to wrap up hour number one next.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, a couple little tidbits here to wrap up hour number one. Marshall Faulk is training Ezekiel Elliott in Cabo San Lucas to get the running back into game shape. All right. Ron Rivera says, no doubt Cam Newton starts the Carolina Panthers season opener. Rob Gronkowski said to his fans, I want to be clear to all of you. I was not in a good place. Football was bringing me down. Gronk, we miss you, babe. We miss you. No question about that. Held a press conference just to tell the fans that football was bringing him down. Yep, that's why I decided to retire from the NFL in March. He says he will be an advocate for players to be allowed to use products for pain relief. He left the door open to possibly unretire, saying, physically, I could play right now, but he's not there mentally. Okay, I gotcha. It's all right. That's no problem. On the LSU front, Kelvin Joseph, former defensive back for LSU, who entered the NCAA transfer portal last month. He is staying in the SEC and will play for Kentucky. How about them apples? Sean Payton, let's see, the Saints wrapped up practice today. No Dwayne Washington, Zach Line, Keith Kirkwood, Austin Carr, Jared Cook, Cameron Tom, Marshall Newhouse, Mario Edwards, Alex Anzalone, Craig Robertson, Josh Martin, Saquon Hampton, all out. Who cares? Sean Payton on undrafted rookie return man Deontay Harris from D2 Assumption College. Quote, I don't think it's too big for him. Payton also pointed to his teammates reacting on the sideline when he finally broke his first TD return, since they could all tell one might be coming any day now, and the teammates absolutely love him. Deontay Harris is going to be your return man for the Saints. Hour number two, the very latest on the two opponents, Georgia Southern for LSU, Mississippi State for the Raging Cajuns, all following our hot topics. Hour number one's in the books. This is the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We'll be right back, baby.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. Hope you're having a great Wednesday, August 27th. What a great story. Ryan Shazier was told he had a 20% chance of ever walking again after his horrific football injury playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The former Ohio State Buckeye. Well, Sunday he was catching balls on the field during Steelers warmups. Forget the fact that he's not playing. Just the fact that he's up walking and the Pittsburgh Steelers continue to pay him says an awful lot about that franchise. It really, really does. All right, welcome hour number two. CD back in the master control suite. Yours truly, Studio 1A, the Jordy Helpert Show, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. With over 60 in southern and central Louisiana, they've got everything you need, whether you're traveling near or far. So if you're going to see the Tigers or you're going to see the Cajuns down in Nolens, ShopRite Tobacco Plus has everything for you. They've got great deals, discounted products, the prices, you cannot beat them. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. We do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, Mr. Domain, how are you, sir? What's going on?
I'm doing fantastic on this Tuesday afternoon because, honestly, we're just that much closer to actual college football being back in our lives. And I'll start things off. I think we need to bring up what happened with Manny Netherly entering the transfer portal. This happened not long after head coach Ed Ogeron's initial press conference on Monday. But it got me thinking, you brought up Christian Fulton at the end of hour one. Do you think that we see Netherly kind of follow his fellow secondary member to Kentucky?
Ooh, good question. I don't know. We'll see. You know, that this is a concern because depth of experience at cornerback is a big defensive concern. Yeah, they've got some really good starters, but after that, you know, we haven't been in the wars yet. So we'll see. But I wish Manny Netherly all the best and Kelvin Joseph. It's in the rules where you can do this. Everybody wants to play, and so they want to go play somewhere else. So they took their ball. They're leaving. Wish them nothing but the best. But let's stick with what we got, and let's see what they can do with it.
That's kind of the only way you can go, Jordy, but it's going to be a lot of fun to see what this secondary winds up doing with a lot of youth around it. Because it definitely feels like DBU is still there. And when you talk about Manny Netherly, him switching over to the secondary may have been kind of the nail in the coffin because of all the top players coming back, especially with one Derek Stingley Jr. But hopping over to the New Orleans Saints, we got to talk about Sheldon Rankins back from Achilles injury. In your mind, what's the right time for him to return to – when he's able to return to game action, let me correct that. Let me strike that, reverse it. When he's able to return to action, how huge is that for a defensive line that needs a guy like him to be 100% ready to go?
Oh, it's so huge for the Saints as depth, whether he's a starter or will work his way back into the lineup as a backup. He's going to play. He's going to get snaps, and it just adds to everything that Dennis Allen wants to do defensively. So it frees those linebackers up to make plays. It allows you to get a pass rush to the quarterback. So he's a very integral piece of the puzzle. And the fact that he's not on the PUP list, which takes him out of half the season for sure, I'm hearing maybe 4 weeks at the earliest, 6 weeks at the latest. So either way, you get him for at least two games more than you were thinking. That's great news for the Saints.
It's also crazy when you really think about it, because it felt like you just have him almost 9 months ago to the day you have him out after an Achilles injury. That seems like something that could wind up taking an entire year, especially for somebody that's dealt with this kind of thing before. And he's already back on the practice field getting ready. I don't think he necessarily performed with the 11-on-11s earlier today during practice. But I think you have him out there, that's going to wind up being huge and helping build him up and get him back into play. And you bring him 4 to 6 weeks, they can wind up putting him in during the prime time of that 2019 schedule, and they can wind up being huge for a defense that definitely has shown they need him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be much. He's got to get himself back in game shape. Yep. And a guy of that size and that magnitude, it's going to take a while because he can only do so much. But at least he's on the practice field, and he's doing some work. So good for him. That is awesome news.
It's absolutely huge, Jordy, to see what's going on with that franchise right now. But sticking with the franchise that's on the come up is the Golden State Warriors. They unveiled – did you see this, Jordy? The Chase Center and the scoreboard they have? It's absolutely massive. It's probably just as big, if not bigger, than the one in a Jerry World.
Wow, I have not seen it, but with the cost of that building, and they spared no expense because they were the hottest team in show business, and they still are with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. They can command huge dollars. That's a big, big market with a lot of money. They'll have no trouble making that money up whatsoever, as long as Steph and Klay are bombing away from three-point land.
Oh, no, they should definitely have more than enough room. 18,000 is the capacity of the Chase Center, which is about 1,500 more than the dump that the Oracle was, as you put it, a while back.
Yeah.
But here's the size of the Chase Center scoreboard, 9,699 square feet. It's almost over 3,000 feet bigger than the Sacramento Kings Golden 1 Center, which is 6,100 feet for comparison's sake.
Wow. How do they do that in a basketball venue with the seats behind the goals and going up? I got to see that to kind of get a understanding of it. But good for them. I mean, wow. Look, nobody does in-game stuff like the NBA. There's more stuff going on at all times, during timeouts, during game action. There is stuff going on. You got to entertain the fans. You got to make the in-game experience special, and nobody does it better than the NBA, I promise.
I definitely have to agree with you, Jordy. This kind of coming in, a little breaking news at this moment, is Arkansas-Mizzou in 2020 is getting moved over to Arrowhead Stadium, the Missouri home game, moving over to Kansas City Chiefs home stadium. That's going to be really cool, and possibly, you know, again, this is just you and I talked about this yesterday, that could possibly be a week zero game. I don't have the schedule for Arkansas-Mizzou in front of me, but I think they could wind up possibly being one of those week zero matchups that we talked about last week.
What year is this?
2020. That's next year.
Oh, no. Not going to be neat. They're not going to put that game as the kickoff to the season. Arkansas is still going to be pitiful. So, they'll have somebody else, I believe. If I had my wits about me, they'll put a better game than that. Even though it's at Arrowhead Stadium, that's great because they're trying to, you know, create interest, and it's great for recruiting in the state of Missouri, and you showcase your best facility, Arrowhead Stadium. Good for them. I'd be shocked if Arkansas-Mizzou is the week zero primetime matchup. I'd be shocked.
I got one more for you, Jordy, and it's about Darius Geis and his take. He actually wound up talking with the media recently, obviously, about what everybody's been talking about fans downing players when they're injured, booing them. And he actually hears him talking about this. Something we didn't get to yesterday. I wish I did. But here it is right now.
These fans know what they're getting themselves into when they become fans. You know, they know this is the most physical sport there is. You know, they know injuries happen. You know, so when fans, you know, start downing players because of injuries, I'm like, bro, like, come get your ass out here and get hit constantly and see how it feels and see how your body responds.
Look, I have been privilege to be on sidelines on the collegiate level, the NFL level, and I have seen the physicality. I don't know how some of these players get up. They earn every penny. It is supply and demand. It is the market value. I agree with Darius Geis on that one. Until you walk in their shoes, how can you possibly? It's not like a marriage, till death do us part, in sickness and in health. It's in health. They don't love you when you're sick. You know, it's only when you're in health. And these players get hurt, and Gronk got hurt, and he stepped away. So did Andrew Luck. So it's their choice. Good for them. You know what we got coming up Saturday, don't you, Clint?
Oh, listen, of course.
Just in case you want to get a little fired up, it's called Four Notes and Goosebumps. Play it. Go. That gives you goosebumps. That brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring some Cajun Chef Hot Sauce with you wherever you go. Nah, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Da, da, da. The place will go nuts. We'll be back with the latest on the opponent of the Tigers, Georgia Southern, next.
Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
All right, it's Tuesday. We're getting closer and closer to the start of this college football season for LSU as Georgia Southern comes to town for a 6:30 kickoff. You can listen to the ball game right here on 103.7 The Game. About a week or so ago, we had Caitlin Sells, who does a terrific job for the George Ann in covering Georgia Southern football, and she is kind enough to join us one more time before you make your trip down to Baton Rouge. And Caitlin, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm terrific. So since last we spoke, give us kind of a rundown on how camp closed up and the health of this ball club.
Well, we're extremely excited. We've had the last couple of game week practices. The boys have been looking good. They're more than ready to get their hands on the ball and get on that field. And I think that they're extremely comfortable with each other at this point.
Okay. Offensive line, when you play against Power 5 schools, it's always kind of determined in the trenches. Offensive line, defensive line, what's the health of your offensive line? What's the quality of depth there?
Our offensive line, I think, is one of the strongest it's ever been. We have seen a couple of losses with, you know, Wesley Fields graduating and Curtis Rainey graduating, but we have a couple of new people stepping up and into the lines, and by the way that they've been looking, they seem to be working really well together, having Cy Wirtz in the back there. This is his third year. He's a powerhouse in the back. He's extremely comfortable, and he knows what he's doing with the triple option. So I think that our offensive line is as solid as ever.
Good. Caitlin Sells of the George Ann. LSU's getting away from their kind of a, to steal a Woody Hayes phrase, 3 yards in a cloud of dust type of offense. They're going spread. Why is the triple option still in vogue at Georgia Southern? Because not many people do it.
You are very right when it comes to that. The option is very considered outdated to a lot of people, but it works for us. If you look back at statistics, we've been running this offense for a really long time, and the only time that we've really struggled with our records and with our wins and losses is when we have deviated from that. It's no secret that we are an extremely running-oriented offense. I mean, you look back in 2013, we beat Florida. We upset Florida without completing a single pass. And the offense is just one way for us to really capitalize on our speed. And, you know, it's worked for us for this long amount of time, and there's really no reason to fix something if it's not broken.
Yeah, I'm with you. Shea Wirtz, your thoughts on him? He's now in his third year running this offense. He's got to be able to do it blindfolded, I would think.
Oh, yeah. I would say when Shea Wirtz first came out, his first season, you know, his first game was up against Auburn, and it wasn't very pretty. And, you know, it started off a little rocky, but he slowly but surely started to kind of just get a handle on it and understand what needed to be done. Of course, as a freshman, he was still a little hesitant when it came to making plays, calling plays, doing what he needed to do. But last year, you saw he really grew into his position, really proved himself, especially when our bowl game, we had a 4th-and-10 run that he ran for 29 yards to put us into field goal position for us to win the game. So he just really has stepped up into more of a confident leadership position. So he really does know how to run the offense in more than just a quarterback, I'm going to run it, maybe throw it, maybe pitch it kind of deal.
What kind of balance would you say? If you had to go with how many times you run it to how many times you throw it, what would be the percentage?
I'd say we run it more 75% of the time. I will say Wirtz does have a good arm on him, and he will shake it up and will throw it. But we have, like I said before, a really strong running offense, and of course we're going to press through that. But I have noticed Chad Lunsford has been pushing a little bit more passing than we've seen in the past, and, you know, we love to see that. We love to see, you know, 60-55-yard passes completed on the field because, you know, we're just not used to that, and it's great to see it.
So when Wirtz drops back to pass, does he have a favorite wide receiver? Is there a go-to guy?
I remember Colby Ransom was a big one last season that was able to catch a few passes. I will say I'm drawing a little bit of a blank right now just because our wide receivers. But, you know, Colby Ransom's a big one that sticks out.
That's because they run it 75% of the time, and wide receivers don't get to see their name being called very often. Everybody in this part of the world is looking forward to seeing this new 21st century offense of LSU. It's a spread. They're going to put 3-4 wide receivers out. Everybody's going to be like dumbfounded. So what is the strength of Georgia Southern's defense this year?
I think the strength of Georgia Southern's defense is mentality. You know, we've always been really solid on our defense. We don't have that many guys leaving, or we didn't have that many guys leaving the defensive line last season. You know, our defense has always done a really good job of holding off plays. I mean, you look, when we played number 3 Clemson last year, we held them to no score in the first quarter. And that was something that we took a lot of pride in. And I think that our mentality on the defense, just, you know, never getting down on themselves, never giving up, never allowing like one bad play to really get inside their head. They're really good at pushing through.
I really want your opinion after the game. I want to know what is really the true Death Valley. Is it Death Valley in Clemson, South Carolina, or is it Death Valley in Baton Rouge, Louisiana? You'll have been to both of them, so you will be able to tell us firsthandedly about that. So, look, you guys have done these kind of games before, so I guess after that initial excitement and that initial hit, football becomes football. And I would imagine that's the mentality that Coach Lunsford wants to make sure that his ball club adheres to.
Of course, yeah. You know, with this being the first week of football, everyone is extremely excited because, you know, football season is the best season. And I'm almost who doesn't want to start the football season off on the right note? And, you know, even though it can be considered a really tough matchup and, you know, it can be considered a, quote, you know, paycheck game or whatever someone wants to call it, it's still a real game to us. It still kicks off our season. It's still important that we show up, show out, and do what we need to do.
No question. Do you have any idea how much Georgia Southern's getting for this game?
I do not. I do know that someone else on our staff does, but I personally do not.
Yeah, I don't either. I got to ask about that one, but that's okay. It's all good. And, you know, with the Sun Belt Conference, this is a great yes, it is an important game, but it's also a game where you can build off of because, of course, the league is the most important thing, and I'm sure Georgia Southern wants to get to that championship game of the Sun Belt Conference.
Yes, sir, we do. We have not seen a Sun Belt championship since 2015, the first year that we were in it. And then, you know, Tyson Summers came and dark days from season 2016 and 2017. But now we're back up and rolling. I think that we stand a pretty good chance this year as long as we, you know, keep on working through the season and we recognize that there's always more to work on. So I think that LSU is a really good opportunity for us to recognize our strengths and weaknesses on the field and to see what necessarily needs to be focused on throughout the season.
Stay healthy. Caitlin sells the George Ann. Tell me about the name, the George Ann, just out of curiosity. Where'd that come from?
Well, it is actually a road that runs through our campus. It's named the George Ann, and we've been around since 1927.
Wow. See, if you don't ask, you don't know. Now I know. A lot of seniors on this ball club, and they've seen the worst of times, and they've seen the best of times. They've seen a 2-10 season. They've seen a 10-2 season. Their legacy, what will you remember about this senior group?
This senior group is a group that rose above. You know, it's really tough to bounce back from a 2-10 season. And they were not satisfied, and they wanted more, and they didn't let themselves get beat down by it. And they came back, and to go from a 2-10 season to a 10-3 season, that's something to be immensely proud of. You know, they were there when Summers got here, when Summers tried to change the entire offense, and it just went horribly wrong. And I feel like it's super easy to beat yourself down when looking back. But just looking and seeing this class and how they have, you know, grown together and how they've been together, this is the class of overcoming difficulties.
Caitlin Sells, the Georgia Ann, thank you so much for your time the past couple of visits. I hope you have a safe trip down to the Deep South and bring your appetite with you, and it should be a fun, fun evening. I think the weather's going to be A-OK. It's going to be hot, going to be humid. I think we've got the rain out of the way, knock on wood. But enjoy your stay down in Tigertown.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, Caitlin. Caitlin Sells of the Georgia Ann. They're healthy. They're hungry. And they run that triple option. They led the country in turnover margin, a plus 22. They're the envy of every coach in college football from what they did a year ago. Much more on Georgia Southern throughout the course of the week. Up next, the very latest, Mississippi State, the Raging Cajuns debut on Saturday. Logan Lowry of the Tupelo Daily Journal joins us next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Oh, it'll be beignets and Bloody Marys come Saturday, August 31st, because it's an 11 o'clock kickoff in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in Nolens as Mississippi State and Louisiana Lafayette get together, get reacquainted. The two played last season. State won it 56-10 in Starkville. This time around, they get to play in New Orleans to kick things off. Logan Lowry, kind enough to join us yet again for the Tupelo Daily Journal. Logan, how you been, buddy? How are you?
Yeah, it's kind of been a lot going on since the last time you and I talked last week. Yeah. So kind of been a little busy.
Well, let's touch upon that. Friday, not a very good day for Mississippi State as far as the NCAA was concerned. 10 football players, one basketball player with some academic improprieties. Give us the 411 on that, please.
Well, it's kind of like you said, it happened last year and kind of knew it was coming, just didn't know, you know, what the penalties would be, and Mississippi State actually turned themselves in. They self-reported it, so they were able to work with the NCAA to kind of get the punishment where both parties were, I guess, agreed upon the punishment for it. But Mississippi State's going to have some suspensions probably for Saturday's game. Don't know how many players, don't know for how long they'll be suspended. All that's still up in the air. We'll actually know that prior to kickoff on Saturday, so we'll know till probably maybe an hour, 2 hours right before kickoff. But, going to learn from that, you know, and see, you know, what comes out of that. It was a freshman level, or not necessarily a freshman level, but an entry level chemistry class that a tutor took some tests and did a lot of the coursework for the players. And, you know, so I don't expect it to be a whole lot of starters out from Mississippi State, probably be a lot of those redshirt freshmen type of guys. So it's going to hurt their depth, but I don't think it's going to take out too many starters.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what kind of distraction this may be. It may be nothing. It's certainly not influencing Vegas, as State's favored by 22.5 points on this one. Mississippi State gets three straight home games to follow. Two of them are against Kansas State and Kentucky. A chance to get out to a great start if they can handle things against the Raging Cajuns. So despite the happenings off the field, which were expected, we didn't know when, how are things on the field? You named a new starting quarterback. What has been the takedown from that amongst the team?
Well, they actually named Tommy Stevens as a team captain. So the players have kind of bonded with him. And according to Joe Moorhead, he was voted. He received three times as many votes as any other offensive player to be a team captain. So the team has kind of bought in and rallied around him. And obviously, Joe Moorhead made that announcement Thursday afternoon, and then on Friday, after the NCAA sanctions came down, Keithon Thompson announced that he was going into the transfer portal. So Mississippi State could be without a backup quarterback heading into Saturday. It's still kind of up in the air what Keithon's status is going to be. Joe Moorhead and the quarterback's coach, Andrew Briner, are still talking to Keithon. He's not with the team right now. He's not listed on the depth chart, but they were going to meet either yesterday or again today to discuss things. They talked again on Sunday. So, they're in discussions, but, I don't know if New Orleans native will be in his hometown or not.
What could that conversation possibly be like? He just, Coach Moorhead, I remember a quote, and I'm speaking not verbatim, but something like the offense just didn't seem to click last year. And now you get the kid coming in from Penn State. He wins the job. What can he possibly tell Keithon Thompson to get him to stay?
Well, I mean, the offense last year not clicking didn't have anything to do with Keithon, because that was Nick Fitzgerald's baby. But Keithon, obviously still has 2 years left. Tommy Stevens is only going to be there for a year. So, Keithon could possibly redshirt this year. He still has that available. Even if he transfers, obviously he could use that as his redshirt year and still have 2 years available elsewhere. But, I guess they could negotiate a situation where he plays in four games or less here at Mississippi State as a backup and still has 2 years to start here at Mississippi State. So, I don't know if that's, in the cards or what, but we'll just kind of have to see how things play out over the next few days.
Time will tell. Logan Lowry of the Tupelo Daily Journal. Tell me about the starting quarterback. How did he win the job? What is he effective doing in the Joe Moorhead type of an offense?
Well, Joe Moorhead talked all during fall camp about how Keithon Thompson and Tommy Stevens were both equal runners. They're both big guys. Tommy Stevens is 6'5", 230-something. Keithon Thompson, 6'4", 225. So they're both equal, effective in the run game. So it was going to come down to whichever guy had the most could be able to complete the most passes, the most consistently completing the most passes. And, Tommy Stevens was set to be the starter at Penn State this year. He transfers out after spring ball. Really surprised a lot of people up in State College with his decision. So, he was set to be the starter at Penn State. So he transfers in. He's already played in Joe Moorhead's offense for 2 years. They really didn't change that thing, much up last year with Joe Moorhead being gone. So he's really – this is his fourth year in that offensive system, so he just kind of had a leg up on Keithon in that regard as far as he understands the system. He's older, more mature. He's 2 years older, so I think that a lot of that had to play into in his favor.
Logan, I don't have a clue, but I'm just just have a feeling this is a, even though you talked about the improved passing game, I still think this is a running game with Kylan Hill and that offensive line going up against kind of a suspect Raging Cajun defensive front. Are you in that same category?
I think you'll see a lot of Kylan Hill and probably a lot of Nick Gibson, the backup running back as well. And, you know, we'll see Tommy Stevens run. Probably Joe Moorhead said the only one to run the quarterback seven or eight times a game as is. But, you know, now with the news that they may not have a backup quarterback, they may run him even less than that. So I think you'll see the quarterback running a whole lot less than they did last year with Nick Fitzgerald. It's going to be a lot of Kylan Hill, a lot of Nick Gibson in this ball game, and you know, they're going to try to get that passing game going. These are the games that Mississippi State needs to work on their passing game, because they're going to have a lot of big games coming up in October and November that they're going to need to pass the ball in. So they need to work, you know, in these games that they should win handily in, they need to work on the passing game and get that thing going before they get into conference play.
Tempting to run it. Raging Cajuns finished last season 112th in the nation against the run. But, yes, you got to throw the ball to get ready for bigger and better games down the road. Logan Lowry of the Tupelo Daily Journal joining us here on the Jordy Helpert Show. 11 o'clock kickoff, Mississippi State, UL in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. You lost a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball, but, boy, not at linebacker, right? Is that the strength of this state defense this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they return everybody at linebacker. And, you know, they're going to have to replace a couple of guys in the secondary, and they're going to have to replace the entire defensive line. But they've got some talent back at linebacker. The thing is that they only play two linebackers on the field at the same time. You know, most of their sets are two linebackers, and then they have a nickelback that they call a star position. And right. So that kind of works as the third linebacker, and, you know, obviously is a lot better in coverage than having a linebacker out there on the field. But they're going to blitz a lot out of that position, out of that star position. So it's kind of a unique thing to Mississippi State's offense or defense that you don't see very often. But, you know, usually just two linebackers on the field at the same time. But they have a lot of experience and a lot of depth at that linebacker spot.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So you got a starting quarterback, you got a good running game, you got a good offensive line, you got a really good defense. What concerns you about Mississippi State this year?
I guess just the depth. Obviously, the defensive tackle is really the biggest thing that concerns me. I mean, defensive ends, they've got some guys that have played some ball games in that spot. They definitely won't be able to generate the same amount of pass rush with the defensive ends that they did with a Montez Sweat last year. But Chauncey Rivers is a really good ball player. He started his career out at Georgia, ended up on Last Chance U at EMCC, and you know, played really well in some spots last year. Kobe Jones, Fletcher Adams, they've got some guys at the end that have some experience. But inside, they've got a couple of seniors that haven't played a whole lot that'll probably be starting for them. And then behind that, it's a you know, some redshirt freshmen. So there's really not a lot of experience. There's not a lot of depth at defensive tackle, and they've got to develop that depth and develop that experience, kind of like the same way they do in the passing game over these first month of the season. You know, when they've got some ball games that they can win, they can work on some things and go ahead and get some of those jitters out of the way before they step into conference play in the month of October.
Jonathan Abram was such a key, integral piece of that defense. He's going to be missed. But it, from the recruiting aspect of things, is there a freshman impact player? LSU's got one in Derek Stingley Jr. He's going to be he's in the starting lineup. He's going to be a punt returner. He's going to be terrific. Is there a player, a freshman, that's going to make an impact or that needs to make an impact for State?
I don't necessarily think that there's going to be a freshman. I mean, there's going to be some guys that have to play this year just from a depth standpoint, especially when you factor in that, you know, how much those NCAA sanctions play a role in there. But, you know, a guy that's going to be able to replace Jonathan Abram is Brian Cole. Brian Cole is a guy that started out at that star position last year. He played eight games and got hurt early on against Florida and was out for the rest of the season. He tore his pectoral muscle. He was a star in the making. He actually began his career at Michigan as a wide receiver and ended up he played immediately as a true freshman at Michigan. And he's going to help out Mississippi State in their return game. He's going to help Mississippi State on defense at that star position. He's a kind of – and Jonathan Abram actually became a star
when he filled in at that star position. You know, when Cole went down with the injury, it was really when Jonathan Abram made that move into the spotlight. So he's going to be playing that same position that Abram played so well at the end of last season. So we'll have to see how he makes of it. But, you know, in all indications, Brian Cole could be the next Jonathan Abram at that spot.
You were penalized an awful lot a year ago as compared to your opponents. Is that a point of emphasis this year?
Well, Mississippi State was penalized. I wasn't penalized at all. But yeah, they've started you know the year last year really sloppy in penalties, and they around that Kentucky game that was really got bad, and then they cleaned things up for the next month and a half. They really didn't have that too many penalties, and a lot of those penalties were pre-snap stuff, holding penalties, you know, just stuff that you don't want to see. And it looked like they got it cleaned up there at the end of the season. And then it kind of reared its ugly head in the bowl game and got Mississippi State into a real mess in the Outback Bowl against Iowa and ended up costing them that game. Iowa was not penalized a single time. They didn't draw a single flag in that entire game. Mississippi State, on the other hand, had well over 100 yards in penalties in that game. And that's really what cost them ultimately in that ball game. So, you know, I asked Joe Moorhead about that, just how they've looked in these scrimmages. Are they drawing the flags? And he said, you know, they've really tried to cut down on the pre-snap stuff. You know, he could live with the penalties that are just going to occur naturally when in a football game. You know, you're going to have holds, you know, you're going to have block in the back, you know, occasionally. But just the pre-snap stuff is discipline. And he said they're looking a lot better in that regard.
Game comes down to a field goal. Is State confident they have a good kicker this year?
Well, they've got a two-year starter coming back in Jace Chrisman, but he's being pushed by Jordan Lawless. And I don't know which one of those guys you'll be able to see out on the field. I mean, obviously, Chrisman has the experience, but Lawless has really pushed him in camp. And on the depth chart, they've got an oar beside both of those guys. So I don't know which guy you're going to see. I don't know if they've got a guy that's, you know, a long-range guy and a guy that's more accurate in short situations. I don't know what we're going to see in that regard on Saturday. But they've got two guys that they feel really comfortable with in a two-year starter coming back in Jace Chrisman.
Logan Lowry of the Tupelo Daily Journal. Dan Mullen had this thing rolling, a 9-10 win team that he was starting to put out on a regular basis. You got road trips to New Orleans. You got to go to Auburn, to Tennessee, to Texas A&M. You have home dates with Alabama, LSU, Kentucky, Kansas State, Ole Miss. It's a brutal SEC schedule. There's no doubt about that. What's a realistic season win total in Logan Lowry's mind?
I think it'll be about like last year. I thought Mississippi State really underachieved winning 8 games last year. You know, they had the number one ranked defense in the entire country last year. So I thought that teams average 7 points or less, you know, in a lot of those games. So Mississippi State was able and couldn't score more than 7 points in a lot of those games. I think they lost, 5 of the games that they lost, I think 4 of them were Mississippi State scored 7 points or less. So, you know, I really think the offense really underachieved, especially with such a good defense on the field. The offense I expect to be a little bit better this year, but the defense, obviously, you can't stay number one, so I think the defense will take a step back. I still think it'll be a top 25 defense, but you know, obviously it won't be at the number one level that it was a year ago, losing all those first-round draft picks. But, you know, I still think, you know, around 8 wins will be about what – I mean, they may win 9, they may win 7, but I think 8 wins is kind of the benchmark for this team this year.
All depends upon the quarterback. I think you're spot on. The defense can't be as good, but they're still going to be good. Joe Moorhead didn't forget about offense. That's how he got the gig in the first place, so he knows what he's doing. I think he's got the running backs. I think he's got some big wide receivers. I think he's got some offensive linemen. And if the quarterback, if Tommy Stevens can play to a certain level, I think State's a dangerous ball club.
Yeah, they can be. Like I said, it's going to come down to quarterback play, and they've got to be better in the passing game. They'll be able to run the ball. There's no doubt about that. They've got 3 starters back on the offensive line. They've got some guys that have played a lot on the offensive line. They're stepping into starting roles. So they'll be able to run the ball with the quarterback and the running back. But, they've got to be able to throw the ball better, and they've got to get the tight end more involved. That's a big thing that Joe Moore had at Penn State was, I think his leading receiver the last 2 years he was, or the only 2 years he was at Penn State,
was the tight end, and they just really didn't get the tight end involved, really didn't have too many receivers involved in the passing game last year. The quarterback was just so inaccurate, so they've got to pick things up so teams don't stack the box against them.
Logan, boy, go get some beignets. Get I don't know if they're going to have a hurricane, but maybe a Bloody Mary. It's an early kickoff, big guy, so easy in my hometown, all right? Easy on Friday night.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of New Orleans, so I'm just going to kind of go down there and get back home. It's not my favorite place in the world.
I got you. Logan Lowry, thank you, buddy. I greatly appreciate it. We'll get back with you when it's time for LSU heading to Starkville, so we appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, you take care. That's Logan Lowry with the inside information on Mississippi State. Again, this is game two of the two-game series. State handily won it by 46 in Starkville a year ago. But it's year two for both head coaches in their respective universities. And I think UL will be far improved this year. We'll see how Mississippi State fares as well. All right, we'll be back. Closing segment, the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Time to wrap this baby up as we always do, brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. Cajun fans heading to New Orleans, Tiger fans heading to Baton Rouge. DC's Little Capital Exxon has everything to make your travels that much more enjoyable. Every snack, every beverage that you can imagine, the cleanest restrooms. Go get you a real live cheeseburger made in their true soul food deli. Oh, my gosh, you'll be in love with it. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Daily history lesson. It was on this day, August 27th, the year 1982. I was not a happy camper because Ricky Henderson stole his 119th base to break one of my favorite players of all time, St. Louis Cardinals, Lou Brock's single-season stolen base record. Ricky Henderson, 119 thieveries on this day, August 27th, the year 1982. If today is your birthday, August 27th, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share it with the likes of Sid Fournette, a 1954 LSU All-American on the offensive line, played multiple years for multiple teams in the AFL and the NFL. Considered a defensive line guru, Pete Jenkins. Happy birthday, Peter. Hope you have a great one. And at one point in time, he was a quarterback coach at LSU. Parlayed that into becoming the head coach at Tulane, then to North Carolina, then to Texas, then to television, and now back at North Carolina. Happy birthday to one Mack Brown. Yes, indeed. All right. If it's your anniversary, well, happy anniversary. Keep adding year after year after year to it. Fun show today. Hope you enjoyed it half as much as we did bringing it to you. Thanks to Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, as the SEC really gets underway. Big game, Oregon and Auburn. That's the marquee matchup of the weekend. Caitlin Sells of the Georgian with the very latest on LSU's opponent, Georgia Southern. Logan Lowry with the very latest on the Raging Cajuns' opening opponent, the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Tomorrow, Wednesday, that means Michael Huguenin of The Athletic will join us. We'll go in the trenches with Chris Truax, the former LSU offensive lineman, and we will talk with the guy that everybody loves at LSU, and that is Michael Johnson, the executive chef of LSU Tiger Athletics. How many meals does he have to prepare a day? So that's what's on the docket for Wednesday. We only have one of these Tuesdays, though. So I hope you have a great afternoon and even better evening. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. CD, outstanding as always. Your efforts greatly appreciated. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helper. Stay thirsty, my friends.